VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. We're having some difficulty connecting with our guest here today. We're anticipating any moment for that to happen with John Guandolo, founder and president of Understanding the Threat. And certainly to continue the series that has been happening as it pertains to the topic of Islam. Certainly some interesting programs that we've heard this week with Usama Dakdak and then also with our special guest yesterday. Yaqob, as he shared the impact of Islam and witnessing to Muslims as well. But a number of additional stories are coming out regarding the continued proliferation of Islam taking place across the country. And we're seeing it manifest, especially with the two new congresswomen who have been proliferating Islam. We have heard the anti-Semitic remarks that have been coming forth, and just for the continued matters that have been developing under the policies from these congressional offices. In addition to that, we are finding that Bernie Sanders has brought on a campaign manager who has endorsed Hamas, and as he has just launched his presidential race this very week as well. So some very critical issues that are going on right now here across this nation, as well as some upcoming events in the month of March as it pertains to the congresswomen that is going to be speaking along anti-Semitic with a anti-Semitic imam at a Hamas-linked CARE event, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and certainly troubling times as well. So until we get the guests, let me just unpack some of these stories for you here today on Crosstalk so that you are certainly abreast as to see the proliferation that Islam is making its way across the country here. And and then we have also seen the state of Arkansas, by the way, stand up with concerns regarding the Council on American Islamic Relations. And let's see, we're just getting our guest right now. Let's see, are you with us here, John?
Yes, sir.
Okay, very good. Well, let me give a formal introduction to our guest here today on the program. And ladies and gentlemen, you have certainly heard many programs on Crosstalk. You know about the intended goal of Islam and this worldwide caliphate. Well, joining us today on a number of issues, we do welcome John Guandolo, the founder and president of Understanding the Threat, a counterterrorism expert. They are the only organization in the nation that provides a detailed assessment of the enemy threat in your local area, providing law enforcement investigative solutions, and also creating state-level counterinsurgency strategies to identify, dismantle, and defeat the jihadi network in your area. He is the co-author of Sharia, the Threat to America, and author of Raising a Jihadi Generation. John, good to have you with us today here on Crosstalk.
Thank you very much. Really glad to be here and appreciate the time with you.
I'd like to just begin talking today about the impact of Islam on Capitol Hill. We are seeing some amazing things happening since two Muslim women now have been elected to Congress. John, they've been far from the typical freshmen who sit back and learn from their more senior colleagues. Instead, they've been quite vocal out on the front lines in a number of areas. Is this just overzealousness, or do you have concern by the steps taken thus far by Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib?
Well, I think I would say this is what we have predicted and what we're seeing, and it's what we have been, like I said, predicted for a number of years. That what America is seeing, both from the Marxist and the Islamic counterstates, are intentional actions. So Ilhan Omar was put in there to be very aggressive with her push for calls for Sharia, her anti-Semitism, because this is how they operate. They operate so somebody is always in a place where they can look, make somebody else look more moderate, so that people that you and I might call allies will be more prone to work with those people appearing more moderate. But the people appearing more moderate are no different than the people that are loud and vocal and overtly, demonstrating Jew hatred, anti-Semitism, calls for Sharia adherence. They're the catcher. You know, the other person is pushing maybe the goalie is the better thing. They're pushing the puck in the other person's direction.
Mm-hmm.
So we can talk more deeply about that, but they have multiple levels and how they actually do this. This is the point. She is playing a very important role in the Islamic movement.
Yeah, and a matter of fact, I believe it's true that Ilhan Omar has really publicly acknowledged her anti-Semitic remarks.
Yes, I mean, she certainly, if you read her quote-unquote apology, it was no apology at all. She just reaffirmed her anti-Semitism, and it runs a lot deeper than that. But here's a woman who legally had no business being in Congress anyway. I mean, she married her brother, which is a violation of U.S. law, and lied on her in the fact that she lied on her immigration paperwork and falsely obtained her visa paperwork and all that. So all of that has been just pushed under the rug. And I just to open up the discussion into this, as you would like to follow it out. I mean, remember, it's the Republican establishment that has failed to follow through on bringing these kinds of things to the light.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a part of what I'm hoping will also be part of our discussion today.
Oh, so explain that. Unwrap that for us here, John. How has this establishment failed in this regard?
Okay, so from a foundational level, strategically, the Islamic counterstate, primarily led by the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, the hammer for the what they're doing is the Marxist movement, the Marxist counterstate. So it's the Marxists who are going to be the ones that will do the preponderance of the violence, at least in the initial couple stages when things start to go kinetic inside the United States. The enforcers for the Marxists are the establishment Republicans. They're the ones that enforce the politically correct narrative that gives the Marxists the room in which they're working. So the entire strategy for both the Islamic and the Marxist operations depend on establishment Republicans to tell their own party members, examples, Michelle Bachmann, asking legal questions from inspector generals, hey, how badly penetrated are our government organizations by Muslim Brotherhood operatives who are really, this is really a counterintelligence and espionage threat, and it's John McCain, John Boehner, Marco Rubio, and other Republicans that attack her. It's when laws are brought before state legislatures, like Andy's Law, which means if you're an Islamic organization and you train somebody and teach somebody in jihad and they go out and perform jihad, you could be held civilly liable. In example, Florida, it was approved by committee, passed through the House, passed through the state Senate. It was the Speaker of the House in Florida, a Republican, who killed it. That is what I'm talking about.
And that's going on
at the national and at the state level right now.
Okay, and that's why I want us to progress, because we know Michelle Bachmann is no longer in office. John McCain, of course, passed away last year. Are there current examples of this sort of thing still going on?
Absolutely. I mean, well, let me ask it from a different direction. Which national Republican figure is speaking truthfully about the Islamic threat, number one, or articulating the devastating Marxist threat and the actual immediate danger they pose to the Republic? And you can't think of one, and I can't think of one, because there is none. The only one who talks about this stuff is President Trump himself,
mm-hmm.
and he himself poses the greatest threat to what they're doing, because he's the only one just leveling the proverbial guns at the Marxists and at the at the Islamic movement.
And yet the story,
nobody else is.
Yeah.
Nobody.
And yet we hear the stories of those who have actually tried to get him removed from office. I mean, he doesn't meet the standards of what the deep state has set as far as their ideals for this nation.
That's right. And, you know, you look at, I mean, I just, through this entire process of the assault on President Trump, I mean, but I think when you put this all together and you actually sit down and just in a 10-minute summary of what's happened in the last 2 years, it is mind-blowing the amount of sedition and treason and the what I think is an incredibly mild and inconsequential response from Republican leaders. And this is what I'm talking about. Or it's the, oh, you know, we tried really hard, but we were 3 votes short. That's really too bad. That means they're being judged on trying. You're being judged on success. We're in a war, and you've catastrophically failed. It was the Republican Party that resisted President Trump for the first 8 months of his administration.
Well,
we had the Republican Congress and Senate, and they didn't. I mean, it was almost, without taking anything away from a handful of Republicans that showed some courage, it was almost all the president pushing, prodding, pulling to get this stuff done. The point is, President Trump poses the greatest threat to the Marxist and Islamic counterstates in the United States because of his ability to speak truth right into the issue. You've now got Bernie Sanders, an avowed socialist, whose new campaign chair for his next run for president is a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we're talking about. This is these movements, these counter states, if we're talking in political warfare language, are working together to bring down the republic. And so these things we see, like Ilhan Omar, the physical jihadi attacks that we're seeing, are going right by our leadership. And here's the point when it comes to the Republicans. They truly are the enforcement mechanism that keeps this train running. And the three things they could do tomorrow or today that would begin to turn this around is, number one, speak truth about Islam and the danger that Islam is to liberty. Number two, stand firm and speak truthfully about America's founding principles and stop surrendering ground legislatively and practically in those areas. Those two things right there. And number three, enforce the law. Stop giving these Marxists, I mean, they're running roughshod over our communities, both the Islamic and the Marxist counterstates. And the, you know, local law enforcement and state law enforcement officials many times take their leads from FBI and DOJ, and they are not doing anything to thwart these two massive threats to the republic.
John Guandolo is our guest here today on Crosstalk. We have a quick 60-second break. We'll come back to talk further about the proliferation of Islam here in the United States of America. By the way, his website is understandingthethreat.com, understandingthethreat.com. We're back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation seminar speaker at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did man come from the chimpanzee?
Chris, according to evolution, chimps and man came from a hypothetical ape-like common ancestor, the so-called missing link. Recently, an evolutionist claimed he found clues that the common ancestor of chimps and man walked upright. Therefore, the chimps who live in trees had ancestors which walked upright on the ground. Was evolution from the tree down or from the ground up? Chris, I don't think either ever happened, but you can see the lengths to which evolution must go to salvage their theory and try to accommodate new evidence. Chris, the evidence doesn't support evolution at all. Apes and men were created as is back in Genesis. There have been minor variations in both, but no evolution.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. John Guandola is with us today. He's founder and president of Understanding the Threat, counterterrorism experts, and looking at the proliferation of Islam across our nation today. And though the president has been standing up, and he's been the most vocal person even protecting our borders, you've heard about the prayer rugs being found on private property along the southern border here as well. But John, you were mentioning that what needs to happen is for our leadership of this land, our congressional, the Republican leadership here, to speak the truth about the dangers of Islam. Why are they not doing that? It would seem that, like, you know, that's the natural thing one would do, is to warn people about the threat that is posed against this nation. What's stopping them?
Well, that's a big answer, so I'm going to just hit three or four points real quickly. In some cases, why they're not speaking truth is because they're ignorant. In other cases, it's because they're scared. Many of them, at least I've experienced in the some of the intelligence community and the law enforcement, they know if they say it, they're immediately going to be fired or have an internal investigation or sanctioned in some way. So some of it's that. But most importantly, it's because the advisors at the national and state levels and the people that our leaders are working with are Muslims, who are telling them that Islam doesn't teach what Al-Qaeda and ISIS teach. And that right there is objectively untrue. And the evidence, I think, or at least a piece of evidence that's noteworthy, is if what Islamic advisors to the U.S. government, to churches, to pastors, when we deal with Islamic leadership in the community, and pastors and synagogues and churches are working with Muslims who say Islam doesn't stand for that, Islam is about peace and harmony, and what ISIS and Al-Qaeda teach has nothing to do with Islam, well then why, when we look at the textbooks used in U.S. Islamic schools, do they teach exactly what ISIS and Al-Qaeda teach are the duties for Muslims in Islam? I think that's a fair question. Because what they teach is there are three duties for every Muslim, and one of those three duties is jihad. And then the books for the 12-year-olds teach that jihad is warfare against non-Muslims, and that duties, the duty of the Muslim citizen is to be loyal to the Islamic State, and that the base, these are all quotes out of these books, the basis for the legal and political system is the Sharia of Allah. That's what's being taught to Muslim children in U.S. Islamic schools, which is exactly what ISIS and Al-Qaeda teach. So that means either every Muslim school in the United States teaching this, which is all the ones we've looked at the textbooks, are teaching a wrong version of Islam, which, by the way, is a capital crime in Islam for Muslims to teach other Muslims anything that's untrue about Islam, or the Islamic advisors to our that are speaking with our pastors, members of Congress, four-star generals, FBI directors, when the FBI directors are giving these people awards, are lying. And what we found is 100% of the time is they're lying. And that is the problem. And our leaders are either too stupid or too incompetent or too unprofessional to actually do their duty. And it is to the point now where we are in very dangerous waters. And I've been doing this now for 17 years, since I was an FBI agent. And it is astounding to me the level of unprofessionalism. And as I've said before, it's catastrophic unprofessionalism, catastrophic failure on the part of our leaders. And so that is the answer in most part to your question, mm-hmm. is because our leaders are taking advice from people who are hostile. It is like during World War II, having KGB agents and Joseph Goebbels working at the Pentagon or the equivalent to explain to our war fighters how to fight the war against the Nazis and the and whoever else. I mean, it's absurd, but this is where we are. And I think what we're seeing is the American people are beginning to realize just how bad it is, and they're concerned whether or not we can actually find a way out of this.
Yeah, look at the hubbub over the last couple of days here as to whether or not we're going to let an ISIS sympathizer come back into the United States to reclaim citizenship, so to speak, a one who left Alabama some 4 years ago to an ISIS enclave in Syria. I mean, I'm thankful, and as I've spoken with some other experts, that the decision that came out from the president yesterday and then from established by Mike Pompeo not to allow this ISIS sympathizers back in the nation. Your comment on that issue?
Well, that goes to show you that that came as a directive from the president to Mr. Pompeo. And that's how a lot of these things are getting done. I think the president's gut on these kinds of things seems to be oriented in the right direction. But because he's surrounded by people that do not understand this threat, it's catastrophic failure, if I might. So my quick answer on this woman, the bride of ISIS fighters, no, of course she shouldn't be let back in the country unless it was going to be to hang her for treason or something like that. But I don't think she fit the legal, she didn't hold public office and didn't fit the legal requirements for treason. But other than that, yeah, keep her out of the country. But then we have thousands of others who are wearing suits and pretending to be nice that are also sympathizers with ISIS and Al-Qaeda openly, but we're allowing them to wander the streets and then sit on Fox News and advise our Pentagon and our CIA.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, and John, it just seems the public relations campaign that they have is in full swing. And I mean, there's so much to say here in regard to CARE, but just this week it came out, and I saw it on Jihad Watch and Creeping Sharia, the Chicago Cubs, that they're going to work with the Hamas-linked CARE against so-called Islamophobia. We understand that the Cubs, CARE, several other Muslim groups had a meeting on February 8th, and they're going to be launching anti-hate PSAs. They're going to have team personnel raising public awareness against Islamophobia, among other efforts, using their brand to fight so-called Islamophobia.
That's right. And so you have Hamas doing business as CARE, working with the Chicago Cubs. That's what you have. You have the leadership and the ownership of Chicago Cubs working with a front organization for a designated terrorist group.
And I want you to explain that so people understand, because CARE has their tentacles all across this nation. I mean, we see the Muslim advocacy days that they hold. We see their push for more and more Muslims to get into political office. We see the interfaith dialogues that are happening all over the nation. Explain exactly who is CARE, so as this happens in people's communities and in their states, they know exactly who it is that they're dealing with.
Well, thank you. That's a great lead, and I would encourage your listeners to go to understandingthethreat.com, and on our homepage there's a box that says CARE is Hamas. Click that, and there is a list, a document there listing the evidence against CARE. But the in short, the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood, on orders from the International Muslim Brotherhood about 26 years ago, created Palestine sections in all the countries, but in the U.S. they created the Muslim Brotherhood's U.S. Palestine section or committee, and the purpose of the Palestine committee is to be a node for Hamas, a terrorist organization in the United States. The U.S. Palestine committee created four organizations. One was the Holy Land Foundation, originally called the Occupied Land Fund, and that trial, which was held in Dallas, Texas in 2008, adjudicated in 2008 was the largest terrorism financing trial in American history, and HLF, it was discovered, and its leaders sent over $12 million to Hamas leaders and Hamas organizations overseas. But the evidence that was the result, by the time they were convicted, it had been 15 years since the Dallas field office had opened the investigation on HLF. By the time they were convicted, the evidence in this massive trial that spanned many years revealed that all of the prominent Islamic organizations in the United States were a part of a hostile movement to overthrow the U.S. government and implement an Islamic State here. And the primary way in which they do it is to build relationships with local, state, federal leaders, to pretend to be friendly and helpful. And really, this is a counterintelligence, intelligence gathering, and espionage operation primarily to influence how our government views this, the issue of Islam and, quote, terrorism and, quote, violent extremism. So as CARE was created in 1994, the fourth organization created by the U.S. Palestine Committee, meaning they're a Hamas front. All the other three organizations are defunct because the U.S. government identified them as Hamas organizations. The founders of Hamas were former leaders in one of those other organizations, the Islamic Association for Palestine, a Hamas front, and they created CARE. And we have the recordings of a 1993 meeting of Hamas leaders in the U.S. that the FBI covered, where they discussed creating a, quote, public relations organization to be a front for Hamas because Hamas itself was not selling real well anymore in the American public. So the next year, CARE was created. And we have the testimony of the FBI agents, which says they were talking about creating CARE. And then we have massive amounts of evidence, including official correspondence between the FBI and U.S. members of Congress and Senate, saying there is a direct link between the Hamas and the U.S. Palestine Committee, and a direct relationship between the U.S. Palestine Committee and CARE. And because of that, the FBI cut off all formal ties with CARE because of their relationship with Hamas. So, again, lots of other evidence, but that's kind of a summary. But we have a lot of information on our website. But if you go to that document, CARE is Hamas, and what I might do is send you the updated email you all the updated copy of that, if you'd be willing to either put it up on your website or share it with others, because it really is. It's a simple, it's a small, you know, I think it's three pages, and it's got a lot of good nuggets about facts and evidence detailing that CARE is a front for a terrorist organization.
And friends, let me give you again the website and the way that you can see that document. Go to understandingthethreat.com. understandingthethreat.com. And right there on the homepage, you go down, you'll see a little red box in the center of the page saying CARE is Hamas. CARE is Hamas. You click on that and that documentation will unfold for you. Now we're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, and we're going to circle back to how we started this program today, when we come back, we're going to find that these two new Muslim congresswomen are actually have booked speaking for CARE events during this coming month of March. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
How can three persons be one God? Does the Bible support slavery? Is homosexuality acceptable to God? Is it okay for Christians to get hypnotized? Is suicide an unforgivable sin? How can I talk to a Muslim about Jesus? Why was Abel's offering accepted by God when Cain's was rejected? Hundreds of questions just like these are addressed in The Big Book of Bible Answers by respected Bible scholar Ron Rhodes. Consisting of over 400 pages, Ron addresses some of the most common questions about the Bible, about God, Jesus, humanity, salvation, angels and demons, prophecy, the afterlife, ethics, and apologetic issues with clear, concise answers. The Big Book of Bible Answers is available from VCY for a donation of just $17 or more. Simply request it with your donation when you call 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. John Guandola is our guest today. John is the founder and president of Understanding the Threat, understandingthethreat.com. We were just talking about Hamas Care, and John, I just understand that Rashida Tlaib, she is joining an extremist imam at an event that's hosted by the Michigan chapter of Care. It's reported in March that she's going to be joining this Omar Suleiman, Muslim Brotherhood-linked imam who has spilled out before his anti-Semitic remarks. And also, but the Daily Caller is telling us next month that Ilhan Omar is going to be speaking at CARE's fourth annual Valley Banquet. And Hassan Shibli, Chief Executive Director for CARES Florida, who according to Conservative Review has stated previously that Hezbollah and Hamas are not terrorist organizations. But here we have these congresswomen that are now going to speak at CARE-related events.
Right, and it's worth noting that the three current Muslim representatives in the U.S. Congress, Andre Carson, Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, and Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, all were hosted by CARE at an event at the Hyatt in Arlington, Virginia, right shortly after the elections, after their inauguration, in January, just last month. So CARE hosted them. The video's on right up on CARE's website. So this is an ongoing relationship. It's more than just them speaking at a CARE event. They have a very close relationship with Hamas doing business as CARE, and that's dangerous, and it's worthy of a federal investigation. But, you know, when today's FBI and DOJ, I wouldn't hold your breath, but we are very hopeful at the new U.S. Attorney General, Bill Barr, that he will come in, and once he gets his feet on the ground, we'll begin taking some positive action, but we'll see.
There's some news coming forth out of the Arkansas House this week. Just this past Monday, passed a resolution calling on their law enforcement agencies to be aware of CARE, and they also said to suspend contact and outreach with CARE, because that's what's happening on so many levels. We have these law enforcement agencies holding outreach events with CARE, but they're saying we're pulling back due to their relationship with Hamas. How newsworthy is that, John?
It's huge. And just to be clear, the representative, Brant Smith, is the House Majority Whip, and this calls on state and local law enforcement in Arkansas to not have any contact with CARE at all. And in the resolution, I just want to read a couple pieces. Whereas the Federal Bureau of Investigation has suspended all former contacts with CARE due to evidence demonstrating the relationship between CARE and Hamas, a terrorist organization, and then it goes down through the list. That the office was open with funds from the Holy Land Foundation, which is a Hamas organization shut down by the government, whereas other nations like the United Arab Emirates have designated CARE itself as a terrorist organization, and then it names directors and founders of CARE who have been arrested and sentenced, numerous ones, and then it's incredible. But this is very important for people to understand. Yeah. There is a lot of evidence that CARE is Hamas. There's no doubt from a factual basis.
That doesn't sound ironic to you, John, that the United Arab Emirates have officially designated CARE as a terrorist organization, and we here in the United States have not?
Of course. I mean, we haven't designated the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the parent organization of Hamas. Hamas is an inherent part of the Muslim Brotherhood. So that would be a step in the right direction. President Trump said he would. He still hasn't yet, but that would be a huge step in the right direction, because then care would automatically fall under that umbrella. Absolutely.
So we're hearing certain things from the president, but you're saying really nobody else, except from what we've just seen take place in the Arkansas House. And people listening today just wonder, what can I do? How can I make a difference in this effort?
Now, that's a great question. I will just say this. When equipped with the facts about these threats and specifically how they operate in local communities, you can make a huge difference. Couple quick examples. I have a lot of understanding of this threat. Prior to Mr. Trump's the election, I was contacted and then began a communications with Jeff Sessions. And I was able, through that relationship, to share with him that a jihadi in a suit had gotten inside Mr. Trump's campaign, and this was now after the election. And we were able to present facts to show that, and they punted that guy right out of there. Then we had evidence that another guy, a Muslim imam, trying to get inside the Trump camp, was also extremely problematic. We were able to present evidence to them so they could make a decision. They decided not to let him in. More to the local level, when citizens and police understand this threat, we just had the incident in Arizona where they charged aggravated assault from an individual that threw rocks at a deputy and then charged at him with a knife.
Yes.
And the deputy ended up having to shoot him. The Maricopa County Attorney's Office has said that they were able to bring state terrorism charges and recognize that as a jihadi attack, as a terrorist attack, specifically and directly as a result of understanding the threats training of their prosecutors in that office. We've had police chiefs and sheriffs tell us they have opened up numerous investigations in their communities as a direct result of UTT training. We had an Al-Qaeda operative identified by a local detective 3 days after he left our training, and he said it is as a direct result, and his police chief reported it to us, it was a direct result of understanding this information. We're the only ones doing this. Citizens who understand this can help their pastors, their police chiefs, their local elected officials, then especially people they have relationships with, that to understand this threat and take appropriate legal actions in their communities to protect their communities. It's absolutely, the citizens are the ones, in our opinion, we're going to win or lose the wars at the local level. And so it's incumbent upon the citizens to do this. And we have revamped and created special training programs just for citizens to teach them how to speak about these threats in a factual way and how to share this with police chiefs, with local elected officials, with pastors, so that they will be given the tools they need to then take action at the local level. So we certainly encourage people to reach out, encourage their police to take these trainings and to contact us and ask to bring the members of the team into their areas to start consulting with them, because that what just happened in Arkansas with that resolution is huge, because mm-hmm. that's shutting the door to a Hamas organization, to local and state law enforcement in a state. Big deal.
And folks, some of you listening are involved in law enforcement even right now, or are involved in your community to the extent where you could bring this training to your local departments. And certainly you can be in contact with our guest today through the website understandingthethreat.com. That's understandingthethreat.com. We're opening our phone lines today. Our number is 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829, taking your questions, comments on the issue today. John, I would like to get this in as well. Many are just shocked at these Muslim community patrols now taking place in New York City. What can you tell us about this?
Well, we have uniformed Muslims patrolling their neighborhoods. And you need to understand that in that community, the law that they're enforcing is Sharia, not local ordinances, not state law, not U.S. federal law. Now, they may, in order to keep local authorities off their back, also do other things that will make it appear as if they're currently more moderate. But that's a Sharia patrol in a U.S. community, and citizens should be outraged and should be using all means that they have legally to shut that down, because that is that's literally like bringing in trying to think of an example, a Chinese police patrol into a U.S. community. That's exactly what it's like. And they enforce Chinese laws in that community. And now if there were a Muslim who is a part of that, he, of course, would say on the radio right now, no, that's ridiculous. This is religious law. This is, you know, we want to make sure that people have the ability to freely practice their religion, except that that's not what Islam teaches to seven-year-olds in U.S. Islamic schools. They teach that wearing a hijab or having halal meat or having women-only pool hours is not a religious accommodation. It's a law that is a divine law that comes from Allah, and under penalty of death must be imposed on the entire community.
Let's pick up some calls.
Very different.
Mark, go ahead. You're on the air with John Guandolo.
Yeah, I believe under the guise of Marxism, Bernie Socialist Sanders has been slandering President Trump as a pathological liar in order to belittle him, you know, as far as being unfit to be president. My question is somebody like Lindsey Graham, would you consider him as more of a Judas Iscariot as far as, you know, not being pro-Trump, or more so a Simon Peter that just kind of caves under pressure as far as loyalty goes? And I ask this all in regard to the Marxist socialist movement to undermine Trump.
First of all, I thank you for the question. It's an interesting way you've posed it. If we look at, you're asking about Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is a guy who, with Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut and John McCain, literally had a public event where they awarded and supported and promoted a terrorist who's now a leader in a offshoot of the Islamic State in Libya. The other question I would ask is, when has he ever spoken truth about either one of these threats, the Marxist threat or the Islamic threat? Now, whether it's he's intentionally coming against Mr. Trump or he's just kind of caving, I would say this. I can't crawl inside Mr. Graham's head, but I will say this. The preponderance of these people, the Mitt Romneys, the McConnells, the Lindsey Grahams, the Paul Ryans, Mr. Trump, he's promoting America. He is promoting liberty. And I'm just talking about objectively. I don't care where your politics are. He's promoting policies of that lean much towards a free market economy, that lean towards securing the United States and its citizens. But it's all about promoting liberty. None of those people I just named are doing that. And they've never advocated for that. And the evidence of their works have never promoted that. So I think the idea of what an establishment Republican is embodied in a guy like Lindsey Graham.
Thank you.
So I think it's intentional.
Thank you for the call here, Mark. And up against a break, we'll come back to more of your calls after the break. This is Crosstalk on VCY America. John Guandolo is our guest today, understandingthethreat.com. And again, folks, check on that box. Care is Hamas. You'll find some pretty startling information there. Back in just a minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. In our series on brainwashing, we have learned these steps. You must remove moral leaders. Two, you must create moral confusion. Three, you must teach revisionist history. And now four, you must block any opposition to the desired outcome. In fact, that's what we see happening in America today, don't we? The shadow banning, the blocking, the banning of conservative Christian voices from social media and even from the airwaves. And in coming days, you will see increasing number of conservatives and Christian broadcasters absolutely eliminated. And one way this will be done is through the fairness doctrine, hate crime laws, and other things. There must be a blocking of opposition to the global paradigm. In fact, this is exactly what Herbert Marcuse, who coined the phrase make love not war, wrote in his 1965 paper on repressive tolerance. He said any of the Christians or conservatives that don't go along should have the right of freedom of speech and freedom of assembly taken from them. This is how you brainwash a people.
And we're going right back to the phone lines here today on Crosstalk. John Guandolo is our guest today from UnderstandingTheThreat.com and talking about the proliferation of Islam. We're going to the lines. We have Charles calling next. Hi, Charles. You're on the air.
Hello. My question is regarding the timeline as far as how long will it take before our country is past the tipping point, both in terms of actual time and in terms of the steps that this, you know, Marxist Muslim advance needs to take before, you know, we're past that tipping point.
Thank you, Charles. Great question.
Great question. I agree. And thank you for the question, Charles. I think we're past the tipping point. I think all indicators are we are past that. I'm judging it. The way we do our work, we look at how does the enemy view where they are, and then objectively, are they looking at it accurately, meaning the situation. The Islamic movement believes they've won, and they're just waiting for the clock to run out. There's no indication at any level, at the Pentagon, at the National Security staffs, at the National Security Council, that anyone in our government understands the Islamic threat, much less the Marxist threat that is working in tandem, and as I mentioned early on, is the hammer for the Islamic movement. It's going to be the leftists that will conduct much more intricate and violence in the United States. So we're past the tipping point, and I think that's why it's going to be very difficult to come back from this. But it could be done. I believe it can be done. We wouldn't be, you know, I'd be on a beach in Tahiti drinking a Mai Tai if I didn't think we could win this war. And I think it's worth fighting for until the very end. But the reality is, we have to speak truth about the threat. We have to defend, constitutional, principles and the founding principles. And we have to take actions legally and use the full force of the law locally, statewide, especially to crush the Marxists and the Islamic movement at the local and state level if we want to win it. But I think at some point this is going to come to a real fight. It's hard to imagine that's not going to happen with as embedded as they are in our community.
Thank you, Charles, for the call. Let's see, going to an anonymous caller. Go ahead, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for this program. I had an experience when I lived in Chicago over 10 years ago, where I worked with an Arab American. He was an American citizen. And it was after 9/11, and he told me that our government was evil, but the people are nice here. And I said, really? He goes, oh, yeah, I sent some of my paycheck back to Jordan and Syria, where he was from. And I said, well, how do you know some of that money doesn't get to a terrorist organization? He goes, well, I hope it does. I said, what are you saying? You're an American citizen. And he goes, yeah, but your government is evil. So I told a friend of mine who worked for the FBI. They investigated a mosque where he was attending. They investigated him thoroughly. And eventually they found this leader of this mosque in Chicago, and they deported him because they had evidence of him laundering money, and he was sending money to terrorist organizations from Chicago. Hmm. So I know this is important.
John?
Well, I don't. There's no question to answer other than saying yes. We have over 3,200 mosques in the United States, and the majority of them are doing exactly what you just described. So this is going all over. But we're not investigating them all over. We're treating them at, you know, onesies and twosies when we think when it comes to our attention, instead of being proactive.
Thanks for the call. Amanda is next in Ohio. Amanda, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. I have a double question on this. The first one would be the resolution you spoke of in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
would that resolution also, would there going to be anything in Ohio or Kentucky or Indiana, any of the states that around Ohio, or could there ever be a possibility of that happening? And I'll let you answer that and ask the second one.
The answer is yes. It just, you have to have a legislator willing to do it with enough backing. And that's really all it takes. It's just a resolution. It's a non-binding resolution, but the legislature does write the checks for the state law enforcement. So normally when they say we don't want you working with CARE, none of them will work with CARE.
Yeah, by the way, that resolution is H.R. 1006 in the Arkansas House of Representatives. Amanda, you had a second question?
Yes, sir. Also, in a smaller areas, I know you spoke of different situations why things couldn't be corrected because they were coming in. Could it be a possibility that money could be paying off a lot of political positions, causing, you know, this to not be solved in some of those smaller areas in the states?
First of all, that's a great question, and thank you for it. Yes, money plays a part in this. If we look at people that retire from the CIA and the FBI, but specifically State Department and CIA, a lot of these people, a number of people, take jobs overseas with Middle Eastern countries like Saudi Arabia, UAE, Jordan, in either commercial roles or advisory roles, which I think should not be allowed. And so, of course, while they're in their positions, they're not going to rip on Saudi Arabia, Jordan, or the Islamic movement. So that creates a problem. At the local level, yes, we're seeing money coming from a variety of sources, and increasingly from Turkey, from Turkish Muslim Brotherhood, from President Erdogan, pushing money down even to local officials. We're seeing it in Texas, where we've got some jihadi candidates for city councils in some of the local areas, where the leftist, George Soros, pours $100,000 into a local city council race. Well,
yeah,
for a local
right.
city council race, $100,000 is a heck of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And or for a district attorney to make sure that they get a Marxist in there and oust a Republican. I'll just give it two quick points that I hope highlight what you're asking.
John, we got 30 seconds.
Okay. In two different counties in Texas, both because of George Soros and left money working with the Islamists, they went from a unanimous Republican majority to now majority Democrat. So, yes, the money is a huge factor.
And keep in mind, CARE has been promoting 200 Muslim candidates for the 2020 election. John Guandolar is our guest, understandingthethreat.com. And, John, thank you for being with us today to inform our listeners on critical issues.
Thanks very much for having me. God bless you.
Thank you for so much for being with us. And again, folks, the website, understandingthethreat.com. John is a former FBI agent, developed the counterterrorism the training for FBI that was thrown out the window because we for some reason we're on a concerted effort not to understand the threat. So certainly be praying for him and his ministry of training others. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.